Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. From good to bored to great. A lot of people quit when they're tired. An entrepreneur should only quit when they're done. Oren Claff, founder of Intersection Capital and author of Pitch Anything. Now, the ability to not quit when you are tired, bored, upset, defeated, broke, stumped, or exhausted to the point of not being able to get out of bed will be the defining characteristic for whether or not you build a business that changes your life and the lives of others. You can only quit when you are done. That is an excerpt from my brand new Amazon bestseller, Hack the Entrepreneur, How to Stop Procrastinating, Build a Business, and Do Work That Matters. To get the rest of Oren's chapter and 49 others by brilliant, brilliant entrepreneurs, go to htebook.com right now or go straight to Amazon and look up Hack the Entrepreneur.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today has spent most of his adult life working in a family business, starting businesses with his brothers, selling those off, and now more recently co-founding a software company. He is the co-founder of Carthook, software designed to help e-commerce stores turn their abandoned carts into paying customers. In fact, a close friend of mine, he was raving about Carthook and how it drastically increases revenue, to the point where I decided to reach out and have today's guest on the show. He is also the co-host of the Bootstrapped Web podcast. Now, let's hack Jordan Gall. Guys, I know we're all focused on starting and growing our businesses, but what we really should be doing is figuring out how to get a good, clean shave at an affordable price. And since we are here at Hack the Entrepreneur, and we love the David and Goliath stories, this is about a startup named Harry's and how it is taking on the razor giants and winning guys over left and right. Harry's is a subscription-based shaving kit that comes straight to your door at an unbelievable price. My shaving kit arrived a few weeks ago, and it gives me the smoothest shave I've ever had. And now you can have the very same thing. Or you can order a kit for that very special man in your life. Harry's is celebrating their 3-year anniversary as a business. And if you're new to Harry's, they've got a special deal just for you for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. You can try 3 of their expertly crafted 5-blade German razors, a handle, and shave cream for just $10 with the promo code HACK. Quality is guaranteed and a full refund is available if you are not happy. Harry's doesn't like to discount because their prices are already really low, but we've worked out a special offer just for you. Harry's will give you $5 off your first order with promo code HACK. Stop overpaying for a great shave. Go to harrys.com right now. That's harrys.com. Enter code HACK at checkout and you will get $5 off your very first order. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on, John.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Cool, let's do it.
All right. Jordan, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
So I think the thing that I pride myself on, the thing that I think I'm good at, is being very proactive. It's led to whatever success I have found. It's been because I kind of got up out of the chair or picked up the phone or just was very proactive. That's how I found my now co-founder in Carthook. So I think that's the biggest thing. I don't sit back and hope things happen. I will do what most people don't do, which is either email the person directly, pick up the phone, ask for the money, try to make the partnership when it doesn't seem like it's likely. So it's that aggressiveness. I think that's the big thing.
I love it. I love it. And being very proactive is awesome. How do you, I'm assuming with being proactive and getting out of your seat, sending that email, making that call, all those things, I'm assuming that involves a lot of potential for people to ignore you, not respond, not pick up the call, or say no. How do you sort of maneuver through that and keep going in this proactivity?
I think it goes all the way back to like childhood and high school, because I think it's a willingness to be denied and be kind of shot down. And I think that's all wrapped up. I like to think, oh, I'm thinking through it and logically speaking, the probability of them responding to me and what's the worst that happens. I like to think that I'm using my brain in that, but I think it's more ingrained than that. And I think it's just being totally fine with being shot down or having people say no and not letting that affect my confidence very much. I've had a few experiences in my life where I get like denied, and then it works out in the end. So I kind of don't mind being denied along the way because I just think, all right, it's gonna work out if I just keep pushing in that direction because it's happened that way before.
Nice. And when you say like back to childhood, so do you mean like, is this like innate within you or is this something that was taught to you? Like, and is this something that you're also trying to instill in your children? Because I
think it is something I'm trying to instill in my children. And you've kind of caught me at a funny and introspective time. My wife is due any day now with our third daughter. So I'm thinking about all these things that I experienced in childhood and how I want to pass them on and what I don't want to pass on. Yeah, I think it's a combination of everything. It's innate and it's also just luck and personal experience. It's all wrapped up, but it kind of forms you along the way. And now you're kind of made up of all these different experiences. Yeah. So,
I love it. Yeah. And congratulations too.
Thanks.
And yeah, it is, although I think some people have it innately within them, I think most of us have to work actively at it. And I think you've distilled it down to that is probably the contributor to most people's successes really is that ability to be denied and keep going. Because you never know when the next one is going to be the yes. And that's just how it is.
Yeah. And that, I think the biggest driver in that is desire. I really want success. And even that is made up of all these things in your past and why you want it and how bad you want it. But if you want it bad enough, then the other stuff, the negatives, they're just not that bad compared to how good it can be. Especially these days online, we're so close to the ridiculous fantasy dreams coming true. It used to be really, really far away. It used to be kind of stuck where you are at work or in your profession and fantasizing about being super successful and traveling the world and having this amazing life was really far away. And nowadays it's not, it's close. And so I just always think about dichotomy, the difference between how much it would suck to fail, this really sucks, and then how unbelievably great it would be to succeed. That I'm like, that just outweighs everything.
Wow. I love it. And you're so true. I mean, this time and place that we live in right now, everything is so much closer to us than it ever has been. So, wow, that's awesome, man. So we went back to childhood for this sort of driver and this like ability to be denied and still push through. But there's also seems to be somewhere along that line between childhood and now, you, like most entrepreneurs, you probably made a realization that either you had this calling to make this something big in the world, or you found that you simply had kind of become unemployable and couldn't work for somebody else anymore. So Jordan, could you sort of tell me if you were unemployable or if you have this desire to make this huge difference and when it was you discovered this about yourself?
I think I'm unemployable and I blame my father. He's a classic immigrant entrepreneur that kind of came to this country with nothing, with three kids and a wife and like $2,000 in his pocket and just worked hard enough to make it. And growing up in a house like that, my father worked from home a lot and he was incredibly open about the business and finances with all of us. We all knew from age, I don't even know, 10, 12, we knew how much money the business was making, how that works in terms of how that leads to how much money my father was making personally, how much our expenses were, what things look like and why you can't get too stressed right now because you know what's coming up in a few months from now in terms of revenue. So from a very early age, that had a gigantic impact on my life. I kind of just lived with it, marinated in it. Then after going to school, I went to Wall Street and I couldn't function. It was just a disaster. Putting me into a Wall Street office for like 15 hours a day for a year was a very definitive experiment. It was, you cannot do this, because they pay you enough that you want to overcome the pain. And I still watched my bank account the day of the bonuses and just hit refresh until my bonus hit. And as soon as it did, I walked into my boss's office and quit. So it was pretty clear to me that was a mistake. I should not have done that. I should have gone to work for like a small company, because I should have known that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. But I learned the lesson the other way.
Yeah. And that's really interesting, the way, like, raised by your father like that, to have that understanding. And do you have other siblings?
I do. I have two brothers. And so all three of us at one point worked in the business, and then all three of us worked together on an e-commerce business that we can talk about. And then all three of us went back to work for the family business. And only recently have we all kind of gone our own ways.
But one of them didn't go like the exact opposite and just like, I want a desk job where I never have to like be entrepreneurial in any way.
No. And we all have different versions of the entrepreneurial mindset. And I'm the most risk loving, and I have been both punished and rewarded for that. And then the others are less risk loving, more risk averse in various degrees. And they have found their way based on that. So one of my brothers runs a franchise, which is, right, someone who wants to be an entrepreneur but likes systems, mm-hmm. as opposed to there's no map, you draw the map yourself, which is what I like. So, there's different varieties, different colors of it.
Yeah, fair enough. And so your one thing is being very proactive. You're risk loving. You're not risk adverse in that way. Now let's talk about within your business. So
yes.
Every expert now talks 80-20, right? So do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at, which we've now learned you're good at, and you're supposed to delegate the rest. Jordan, can you tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
Yeah, doing the 80-20 rule. how's that?
That's the greatest answer I've ever got.
What are you not good at? Applying the actual 80-20 rule. Understanding the 80-20 rule and not applying it. That's what I'm not good at. I struggle with this so much because, and this might also be a relic from the past, from a family business where at some point we did everything. It's very hard to get over that. Books have been written about it, and everyone has trouble with it to a degree. The difficulty I have with it is in the stage that I'm in right now in the business. You can identify what you should be working on, and you know as soon as there's more money, you know what should be delegated, but what do you do until then? So it's like this catch 22. How do you work? You know you need to work on just the things that matter so you make more progress, but you need to make more progress before you can hire someone to do the other stuff. I feel like it's like, it's like a valley of death. You just need to get to the other side one way or another.
Yeah. So that's the problem, I guess, and the whole not knowing the 80-20 or not being able to implement it in a certain way. But what if you say, if you get to a revenue goal, you know what you should delegate first. So what is that? That's the answer I'm looking for. What's that first thing you should delegate? It can't be like, I need an 80-20er in my business. Don't give me that line. What's the first thing that you, Jordan, needs to delegate once you can?
All right. So without trying to analyze it and give you the smart answer, I'll try to give you just what's on my mind.
That's what
on
I
it.
Want.
And I'll ignore if I'm wrong or if people will criticize, it doesn't matter. Well, the first things that I want delegated are things that I do not enjoy. There are just a bunch of things that I can't stand, and it ruins my mood for the day, and it affects my outlook and my optimism and my creativity. And I think I would do my best work with a lot of those things off my plate. Anything corporate. Anything with the state of Oregon and the state of Delaware and this filing, I'm like allergic to it. I cannot stand it. Even if it's like a half an hour task to fill out some form, the whole time I am fuming. So anything like that, like an outsourced CFO, that would be like one of my first fantasy hires.
Wow. That's awesome. And I try and have this conversation with people about this. I'm the exact same. Like I despise it. When it comes to the forms and the tax part of it, it numbs my mind, and it actually hurts me inside to have to deal with.
Yeah. And then just dealing with the government. So there's obviously an element to making sure that strategy is what you hold on to and that has the most impact. But I also think it's a combination of, things that you hate to do, try not to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let's move to projects, Jordan.
Sure.
So it's probably changed over time. So let's kind of start near the beginning. So, I mean, growing up and being in and then moving into like a family business, but then I believe you went, you said, with your brothers into e-commerce. How did you determine at that point, like your first business that you guys should start?
Well, it started with a gigantic mistake. So after the Wall Street gig, I went and worked with my father for a few years in the family business, and we grew that together. And that was a great experience. And I was basically in charge of just all the systems in the business and the marketing. And then after that, I thought, okay, it's time to go on my own. So I started a political website that was advertising revenue based. This was back in 2002. Yeah, 2002. So everything was very hot in politics and I was very into it. So I started that business and it was basically fun, but a gigantic disaster for a year. And I basically went the wrong way. I went the build an audience, worry about money later. I went advertising based that I knew nothing about. So I was just completely wrong. Just made one giant mistake and learned a lot from it. And at the end of that, basically, we had a meeting with an investor who was a good friend of a friend. And instead of blowing smoke up our ass, he was very honest with us and basically decimated our business situation in like a 30-minute lunch. And that helped us look inward and say, you know what? Let's move on. And that's how we actually got into e-commerce, because my older brother had started an e-commerce business while my younger brother and I had started the political business. And his business wasn't really moving anywhere. We wanted to drop the political thing. And so we basically approached my older brother and said, hey, this e-commerce thing, you're kind of getting bored of. Why don't we give it a try? We're going to drop the politics thing. And that's how we got into it. And fortunately, we were able to get the e-commerce business rolling along, you know, from just like $500 a month to 1,000 to 3,000 to 5,000 to 10, 20. And then like every month, it kind of doubled. So that's how we got into the e-commerce business, kind of by mistake and then desperation.
Yeah, which I mean, oftentimes seems to be the case.
Yep.
But it's moving forward. It's progression and just, again, it's proactivity, which is you saw your brother making $500 a month. I guess that was enough to tell you that this is a market, like we can hit this harder and actually just improve it.
Yes. And my older brother, who's more risk averse, was the one that was looked for a model to copy. And I had gone out on my own, right? So this is one of those moments where you're being creative and you're trying to kind of blaze your own path and you get punished for it. So what we had done, we had looked at a company called Hayneedle. Well, it's now called Hayneedle. It used to be called NetShops. And what they were doing is they were building up a big network of very niche e-commerce sites. So instead of having a big sporting goods site, they would have a fishing lure site and a hammock site and an electric fireplace site. And the assumption was when you're running AdWords to a hammock site, you're more likely to get conversions than you are if you're just sending people to a hammock category in a sporting goods site. And they were successful with it. And we basically started copying it. Yep. So that's what our e-commerce business was. Our most successful site sold solar lighting products. And then we had a bunch of other sites that were very, very focused niches.
I love it. And then, so then you made the move into, was it Banyan Tree?
Yes.
And into like sort of teaching or no, helping other people optimize their e-commerce sites. Is this right?
Well, so the e-commerce business, it did pretty well. We did like $500K in revenue in the first 12 months and then sold the business in month like 13 or 14.
Nice.
So it was kind of fast and it was a good lesson. It wasn't anything spectacular. It wasn't life-changing.
Yeah.
What I say is it wasn't life-changing, but it was career-changing just because the experience from going from zero to growth to selling a business is something that I want to do several times in my career. And that was the first time.
Yeah.
So just going through it once, I think will make the next time easier. So after that, we actually all went back into the family business and started growing it and then quickly came to realize that we love each other. And because we love each other, we should stop working together. So we stopped working together. And that's when I went out and started Banyan Tree, which was basically like just consulting for anything. I ended up doing like a productized service for sales funnels. I did some e-commerce consulting. I helped people with their checkout pages. I sold a course on how to build your own sales funnel. It was kind of me just kind of experimenting with that before jumping into the current business, Carthook.
Okay. And so now we're at Carthook. So Carthook is I'm going to guess that it's like you scratching your own itch, but I would love to know what it is. Because the struggle always is, right, is we have a ton of ideas for products or businesses to start, and we typically have a hard time deciding which one it is we should put our time, energy, and resources into. So I would love to know kind of the process. I doubt that it's a written process, but maybe it is. But what the internal process is you go through to determine when that project is worth your time.
Yeah, this is, it's always tricky. There is no science to it. You know, people can try to break it down to a science, but you still need to guess at some point or another and take a leap. So I think going back to the experience I described earlier with, I tried to blaze my own trail, my brother copied someone and copying worked better. I think that had a really big impact on me. And now I like copying as a business model. I don't really care what people think of it. I think that's what everyone does, and they innovate a little bit and they convince themselves that they're not copying other people. But I think the whole economy is based on looking over what someone else is doing and applying it either to your industry or directly as a competitor and improving it slightly. So, the Samwer brothers from in Germany, in Berlin, the guys that copy the like Airbnb of Europe and Zappos of South Africa. And right, they've been spectacularly successful with that. They're some of my idols. Everyone hates them. And I'm like, no, those guys know what they're doing. Not coincidentally, it's three brothers who are all billionaires. So you know what I'm shooting for here. So Cardhook, you're right. It was a scratch your own itch plus copying. So when we ran the e-commerce business, we used an abandoned cart email application like Cardhook, and it made us money. So we paid something like $100 a month for it, and it made us $3,000-$4,000 every single month. So when we finished up the e-commerce business and I wanted to get into software, we basically looked at all the expenses. We looked at what did we pay for as an e-commerce company. And that was one of those expenses that was a no-brainer every month. It's like, okay, we paid $100. They made us $3,000. Never going to cancel that. So move on. And I thought back to that and I said, I kind of want to be that guy. I want to be on that side of the equation. And so basically copied the software that we were using and just made it much better because the one we used was just horrible, but it still made us money. So I said, hey, if I copy it and I make it better and I'm actually making a good product and it makes people money, which is the best possible justification for paying someone, then I like that equation.
Wow. I love this. And it's so, so, so very true. Everybody does copy. I hate when people try and explain how they don't want to copy. They want to create this brand new, it's like, no, come on. We know you're not doing that. So don't try and pretend that you are. And why try and reinvent the wheel? And then you're right. Finding a business that can actually just save people money is the best justification for them spending money with you every month. So why not create a business like that?
Yeah. That's what we liked. The thing I liked about Cardhook the most is that it was directly quantifiable. Like people clicked on your email and they bought, and I can show you, I made you $4,000 this month and I will now charge your credit card $99 and then we're cool. You know, you're not going to cancel because you're happy and I'm going to do it again next month.
I love it. And so now you have Cardhook with the co-founder and you're running it successfully. How now do you determine, let's push this project even further. So now within the business, how do you determine when a new project, a new sort of angle or a new version of the product is like worth the time and energy and resources?
Yeah. And you're catching me at a very appropriate time for this because we're about to launch a new product a week from today. And, you know, we're not bootstrapped. We did raise a little bit of friends and family money, but it's effectively bootstrapped. We don't plan to raise another big round or anything like that. So we are focused on revenue and profitability, not on the next funding round. And because of that, you know, there are not many months to waste. You know, every month that goes by, I wrote a blog post at some point about it's like playing with a Rubik's Cube, but you only have a certain number of moves. And so if you screw up the first few months, you're just going to start running really low on moves. And if you run out of time, you run out of moves before everything clicks. So we don't have that many more months to mess around with. And so every project, every feature, but we only have three people on the team. Everything is a big decision. It might not feel like it, but just wasting 2 weeks is deadly. It's dangerous. So this new project that we're undertaking, features I see is relatively easy. If people yell at us, especially people who pay us a lot of money, if someone who pays us $19 a month or whatever it is, ask for a feature that sounds like a pain, we just politely decline unless we keep hearing it again and again and again and again, and then moves up the priority list. If somebody paying us $1,000 a month says, hey, I would like for this new thing to happen, we take it much more seriously. So it's kind of a cold, calculated, kind of straightforward thing with features. The project was scarier because we have spent something like 3 months thinking about this, planning it, working on it. And it's a combination of what's the revenue potential? What can this do to the company? Is it going to bump revenue up by 20%, or can this really have a big impact? Can this double the revenue that we're doing? And then we took that and we said, what's the worst that happens? What's the downside? And then go with your gut. I think, again, and there was some validation. So I'll give the scientific side of things some credit, where when we first had the idea for the product, we just built a super simple version of it, took screenshots and sent it to people and said, hey, is this something you would be interested in? And the response was generally, here's my credit card. So we knew, okay, we're onto something and it's worth pursuing, given that it can have a big impact on the business. And so we think it's worth the risk. And we've gotten some validation from people saying, yes, I want it. Yes, I want it. And so, okay, we knew it was a really big risk and it still is, but I'm optimistic.
Wow, that's awesome. And do you, when you went to start CardHook and now within it, do you have like a revenue sort of cap goal, sort of where you think the market lies? It's kind of a new, you can say as much as you want that you are copying other things that might have existed or don't work as well, but I don't think the market is at like its full growth.
No, it's still only 25% of e-commerce stores that use an abandoned cart app at all.
That even knows about it. But it's the kind of like, once you find out, like the reason I'm talking to you is because a guy from my mastermind, he said it and like, what? I've never heard of this tech. Like, why doesn't everybody use this? It's like a no-brainer.
Yes.
So yes. Your idea of starting it, is it based on what is this like size of this market? What are you trying to, or does that include you educating people to bring them into this market?
I don't. What we look at is we see even if we do no education, because that's expensive and difficult and requires time and more money and more people, we just want to make the pitch to people because it's a good pitch. It's, I will make you more money. Here's how. Give it a try for 30 days. If you don't make, right, our pricing is based on how much money we make you. So it's kind of like, you know, with the other themes in my life, it's very straightforward. It's just about the money. It's just how much can we make you and how much should you pay us based on how much we made you, not about features and how many emails we sent out or anything like that. And so I think the market is big enough for us to have decent revenue without anyone even noticing. Right? We can do exactly what we're doing, not add another feature at all, and do 100K a month, and the market wouldn't even know we existed. So I like that because I don't feel the need for CardHook to be a $1 billion company. I just want CardHook to get us over the hump. And by that, I mean to have enough money coming in that we are all taken care of. Profitability is all set up. The company is healthy. Company's making profit every month. And we have extra to kick out to invest in other things. And so I think that's how the ball starts rolling over the next few years. So I see CardHook as a good product that makes people money and can grow to a decent size where it can accomplish that goal. And from that, everything changes. From the day CardHook is bringing in 20, 30, 40, 50K a month in profit, and we can invest that into new ideas and new businesses, I think that's when everything changes.
I love it. I love it. I love your clarity on the goal of the business. It was an excellent, excellent response.
Well, it's tough, right? It's like, I'm clear on the fact that I don't know what's next. It's just that the CardHook is a means to the next step, even if we don't really know what those other things are. We just know that one thing at a time. You got to get to base camp one. You can't climb Mount Everest from ground floor up. You got to go to base camp one and then base camp two, base camp three, and base camp four and up.
Exactly. Exactly. I love it. All right. This has been a lot of fun, but this segues us nicely into my final question for you, which is this idea I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So sometimes I think that we live as entrepreneurs and dreamers in this gap where we never see ourselves as successful because we're always setting the metric of revenue, whatever it is, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year in the future. When I do this, I will be successful. Yet right before you hit that, you're going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future, which you have to do. I get it. But sometimes from the outside, we look really successful. And from internally, we never see ourselves as such. So you have this goal with Carthook to kind of, it's not the means to it. And necessarily, it's kind of part of the journey to where you're not even sure yet, but that's kind of part of it. That's totally cool. It can set these revenue goals of 20, 30, 40, 50, 100K a month, but that's all fine. And that's all in the future. I would love it, Jordan, if you could right now stop and turn around and look behind you. You've, since childhood, you've been living within businesses, learning about them, growing with them, and using like your proactive nature to take you to where you are. So I would love it if you could stop and look back to there, to today, and the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses, and tell me how you feel about your entrepreneurial career up until today.
Oh, what can I tell you? I think your description is of the gap is very accurate. And I think you described my feelings along with a lot of other feelings, other people listening. I think that you described it very accurately. What's the question again? Like, how do I feel now, or what's the?
I don't want to know what anything about the future at this point. I don't care where you're going at this point. I literally want you to stop and look behind you and tell me how you feel about everything you've accomplished up till now.
If I'm going to be honest, I feel okay. I don't feel great.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think you what you described, the dissatisfaction, regardless of where you stand or where you were a year ago compared to today or 5 years ago, I think that's true. And that's, I think I'm right in the middle of that. So I have a really hard time looking back and saying, you know what, I should be really happy with where I am. I just don't think that's real right now.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think it's yet to be seen. I don't know if it's the stage in life or kids coming into the picture kind of changes your perspective and everything, but I feel very, very far from done or in a place to rest or even pull up in any way. And I think this is such a fallacy. It's like, as we get more successful, I think I will find out more about myself, that if I am just driven by ambition, that I just want more no matter what. Or if, as I get closer to there, or once I get there, the proverbial there, I will be able to slow down and be, you know, happier or and more relaxed. I don't know. So I feel very, very much in the middle. I'd have no conclusion.
Fair enough. And that's, I mean, there's no simple answer to it. I know that people listening to you talk for the past half hour are going to disagree with you. And that's totally cool because that's it's cool. You see yourself differently than... That's the whole idea, is that literally from the outside, people, we all look at other people as successful, and we very rarely look at ourselves as successful, even just in the journey, not even as like successful in the end, like here's the goal. It's just the way it works. So
yeah, it's what's the saying? It's right, viewing other people's highlight reels by living your behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. And we judge ourselves way harsher than we do other people. It's just how
And we compare ourselves to the people, and we're all susceptible to it. And I don't know. I also like nice things, nice shiny expensive things, like everyone else. And you know, you just want more.
Totally. Exactly. I agree.
It's not greed. I don't know what it is. I have no idea how to define it. I don't know if you can. You've spoken to a bunch of people about it. I don't know if it's ambition or trying to prove something to other people or prove something to yourself. I think everyone has their own mix of all these things in their own little head, and then you got to just deal with it. I think that's like the hardest part of entrepreneurship, is dealing with that nonstop internal conversation and debate about, am I good enough? Am I doing the right thing? Am I stupid? How come these people are having so much easier for them? Look how nice their life is. How come mine? How come I'm not driving a Tesla? It's that just forever. At some point, we have to kind of be happy with that. That's who we are. We like that ongoing conversation.
Yeah. There's,
as long as you drive in Tesla. I want to have that conversation from inside the Tesla. How about that?
it's a great way to wrap it up. Jordan, this has been an absolute blast. We have talked about your business in passing, but please, right now, can you tell the listeners specifically where to find out more about you, Jordan, and more about Carthook?
Yeah, so the business is at carthook.com. That's cart, like shopping cart, hook, like H-O-K. And it is an abandoned cart application for e-commerce stores. We have a bunch of integrations. So regardless of if you're selling, you know, digital stuff on Easy Digital Downloads or on Shopify or Magento or anything else, we work with the platform and help you recover your abandoned carts. And then I also have a podcast that I do with my buddy Brian Castle from Audience Ops. And the name of that podcast is called Bootstrapped Web. So you can hear more rantings like this there. And you can check out the business at carthook.com. And that's it. Hopefully you hear about us in about a week when we launch on March 22nd, this new product. Hopefully it makes its way, you know, to your Facebook feed.
Excellent. Excellent. And you are on Twitter, right?
Yes, it's just at Jordan Gull. Excellent.
At Jordan Gull. I will link to carthook.com and Bootstrap Web on the show notes for you. So when you're done driving or running or walking or working out, you can track them down there. I have to say, absolutely, I think Carthook is brilliant. I love that your buy buttons on your pricing page aren't actually buy buttons. They're just start recovering revenue buttons. The greatest call to action ever. So if you just want to see brilliant call to actions even and nothing else at this point, go to carthook.com and check it out. But I endorse it. It's a great, great product.
Yes, you can see the amalgamation of other people's marketing sites that we've copied at carthook.com.
That's it. So it's like the perfect swipe file. All right, Jordan, this has been a blast, man. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for sharing. I really, really do appreciate it. Please just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Jordan, thank you so much for joining me. That was a lot of fun. I really, really, really enjoyed that conversation. And I hope you out there listening enjoyed it as well. So it's a really, really cool, you know, I like software. And it's really a scratch your own itch. And I love that. I love it because of finding an issue that you're having in your day-to-day life or in your business or in any aspect. And finding a point that's just, you wish that there was a way to, for it to be better. And rather than waiting for somebody else to do it yourself. And Jordan, they implemented this problem and they realized that they could fix it. And they thought, well, we can probably fix this for lots of people and created a great business out of it. And so I really, really love what Jordan's doing at Carthook. And I'm really, really happy that I got to have this conversation with them. It's a cool story of his going through like the family business to going out on his own with his brothers and then going back to the family business. And now it's interesting. I enjoyed his insights into business and life in general in a lot of ways. And I like his philosophy of family first, then business, then pleasure. And it's helped him, I think, get to where he is. And I don't know. I just really, really enjoyed the conversation. So that being said, it makes it really easy. When I enjoy the conversation so much, it makes it really easy and fun to go back and listen. And so I went back and I listened. There was a bunch of things that Jordan said. And so I went back and listened, and then I went back and listened again. And then I went back and listened one more time. And that final time, there was this one thing that Jordan said that was so clear to me that it was just perfect. It was right there. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
It's like playing with a Rubik's Cube, but you only have a certain number of moves. And so if you screw up the first few months, you're just going to start running really low on moves. And if you run out of time, you run out of moves before everything clicks. So we don't have that many more months to mess around with. And so every project, every feature, but we only have three people on the team. Everything is a big decision. It might not feel like it, but just wasting 2 weeks is deadly. It's dangerous.
And that's the hack. Jordan, Jordan, Jordan. I love this. And I not only love this because it is, I don't know if it's forced. It's kind of forced, like you, or self-imposed, I shouldn't say self-forced or self-imposed on yourself where you are putting your back up against the wall, right? There's the old story of the general bringing his soldiers into battle. And like when he landed on the shore with his ship, he got them to burn the ships behind him. Because when you burn the ships, people freak out at first, but it's like you have no choice. You have no choice, but you put yourself into the position where there's no plan B. There's no, like, you just have to go. You can't jump back on the ships and take off. You have to win the battle. And so I don't know whether this is really self-imposed or whether it's not, but it's something that you out there can use to great effect for yourself, your goals, your business goals. Because when you force yourself to not be able to waste time, waste money, waste options, and just waste any momentum that you might gain along the way, because how Jordan says, we have to so much focus on what it is the next feature, the next project is, and make that decision clearly, because we can't afford to waste 2 weeks or a month. And really, what if you self-imposed this on yourself? In some way, you put up the idea that there isn't a plan B, you have to succeed at this. This might be the thing that pushes you forward, right? Because this might be the thing that ultimately we don't have, all of us, it can be deadly to waste 2 weeks, waste a month. It's that could be the thing that actually makes us and convinces us to never go and take this step, because we talk ourselves out of things the longer we put them off. So maybe we need to self-impose deadlines and really value the waste of time and energy and resources that we do to ourselves, really. And so I love this mentality. I love how he's got such a clear vision where it's like, no, I can't choose to just not do this tomorrow. I have to do this. If I have given myself 2 hours to work tomorrow evening, I'm going to do it, because I can't afford to waste 2 weeks, because it will be deadly. Maybe not deadly to your business, because maybe it's not even a full-time thing, but maybe deadly to your goals, deadly to your dreams, deadly to the fact where the idea you have might never actually ever go live. Because we all know that every week, every day, every minute that goes by where you procrastinate and put off taking action and hitting publish and starting and getting it out there to the world, it just exponentially increases the chances of it never happening. So use this. Burn your ships. Make it so that you think about it like the Rubik's Cube, he says. It's like a Rubik's Cube you have as many tries as you want until you figure out the Rubik's Cube. But this time, you're very limited. Limit yourself to the amount of moves you have until launch. Give yourself a month. Give yourself 2 months. Give yourself 6 weeks. Give yourself 3 weeks. However long you think you need, but make it tight and give yourself no out from that. Force yourself to do it. I love it. Thank you, Jordan. Thank you very much. All right. That was a lot of fun. I thank you so much for joining us today, as always. It's absolutely a pleasure. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Go check out the show notes. Check out carthook.com if you are in the e-commerce business, or even if you're selling software and such, it's valuable. My friend who recommended this, he sells a course, and just the abandonment on shopping carts is a big, big problem online. And so Jordan is working to satisfy a big problem. And I love how his sales page even works. I mean, just go check out his sales page to see the hook that he puts for a cart hook. It's awesome. Shows you how much money you can save. And that's what the cost of his product is based off. It's really, 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 really cool. So definitely check it out. But yeah, it's been great. If you have any questions for me, if you have any guest recommendations, I'd love to hear them. John@hacktheentrepreneur.com is my email. Feel free to drop me an email. I'd love to hear it. If you want, attach a picture like where you are right now listening. I love getting pictures from you guys. It's very, 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 very cool. All right. It's been fun. I definitely appreciate you stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.